Chapter 6. There was a time when Vinny and I weren't speaking to each other. A young Ojibwe woman had asked me to help her, and I tried to do that. But because she was a member of the tribe, it was the tribe who came to her in the middle of the night. They took her away, they helped her, and yeah, I suppose she was probably better off with the whole community on her side instead of one aging ex-cop. But they didn't tell me. That was the thing that burned me. I still haven't forgotten it, and I don't imagine I ever will. Vinny wasn't one of the men who actually stole her away, but he knew about it. He had to know. Even now, if he were here, I could ask him about it one more time, and once again, he'd try to deny that he had 100% knowledge of what had happened. But there would be no point in doing that, because it would just push us back, closer to that point where we couldn't be in the same room together. In the end, we got over it. We got over it the way men get over things, not by talking things out heart to heart, but by working on something together. He showed up one day to help rebuild the cabin at the end of the road. The next day, he showed up again. By the time the walls were up, we were talking again and eating dinner at the Glasgow, which is a good thing, because it's hard to avoid a man when he's your one and only neighbor. That feeling, though, damn it all. That feeling of being the outsider, of being totally excluded from everything that's going on around you, even if you want to help, even if you know you can help. That's the feeling that always stayed with me. Now, here was Vinny, hiding away somewhere with his wayward cousin, obviously in some sort of trouble. If the situation were reversed, he'd be the first person I reached out for. We'd been down enough roads together over the years. We'd faced so much trouble, so much death and brutality. Hell, the man had once taken his own blood and painted stripes on my cheeks, like we were brothers. So when it's his turn to be in a real jam, what does he do? He sends a message to the res. I get it third hand, almost as an afterthought. Tell Alex I'm okay. Tell him not to worry. As if he'd even think for one second that would be possible. Not to worry. I mean, come on. When the chief's taillights disappeared down the road, I went inside and sat back down in that same chair. I ran over everything in my head. Finally, when I thought I might punch a hole right through the table, I got up and went through my desk instead and found a business card. I dialed the number.
Agent Long, what?
The voice of a woman who had been in a deep sleep just a few seconds ago. Hi, I said. It's me, Alex. I woke you up, didn't I?
Alex, what time is it?
It's about midnight, I think. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I have to be up in 5 more hours anyway.
She laughed, and something came all the way through the phone line, over all those miles, and went right through me. Agent Janet Long of the FBI, stationed in Detroit. We'd spent all of 2 weeks together, when she had come up here to help track down a killer. When she had left, I had promised to call her sometime. I never did, until now. You are a goddamned fool, I told myself. All this time you could have reached out, and you pick now, in the middle of the night, just because you can't think of anyone else. I'm sorry, I said. I shouldn't have called. I mean, I should have called, but not like this. I should have...
It's okay, Alex. What's the problem? I can tell you're upset.
I just need to talk to somebody. I'm gonna go crazy if I don't.
So talk.
You remember Vinny LeBlanc? I said.
Your friend, yes. I met him at that bar.
He's gone. He and his cousin, they're in some sort of trouble.
What kind of trouble?
I just broke a promise, by the way. I wasn't supposed to tell anyone, but I figure you don't count.
Thanks a lot.
No, I mean being on the job and all. Which, by the way...
Yeah?
Tell me everything you know about this thing that happened up here, at the Newberry Airport.
Whoa,
she said.
Time out. Are you serious?
I'm not saying they're involved. I'm just asking you to tell me what you know, beyond what was in the paper. I know 5 men were killed, but...
Alex, if they're not involved, why are you asking me this?
I can't see Vinny having any connection to this, but as far as his cousin goes...
Do you think he was there, at the airport?
I can't rule it out. I mean, I didn't think it was possible, but I guess I don't know him that well. If he was actually there, well, let's just say it would explain some things if he was.
You need to talk to somebody up there, she said. Right away. If you have any information that could...
I already have, okay? There's a new police chief on the res up here. He was just sitting right here at this table. He knows everything I do. And in fact, hell, he's the one who received the message from Vinny.
What kind of message?
Just that they're both okay. As if they were, I don't know, hiding out and figuring out what to do next. I'm not really sure, but that's the only scenario I can imagine.
So you've had no contact with Vinny yourself?
No, I said, tapping my fingers on the table.
And that bothers you,
she said.
You want to go get yourself right in the middle of it, don't you?
It wouldn't be the first time. We seem to do that for each other. She laughed again.
This is so weird, she said. I was just thinking about this case when I went to bed, and then you wake me up to talk about it. I'm not dreaming, right?
So you do know about it?
Of course I do. Marijuana flying in from Canada in the middle of the night? People shooting each other?
So it did come from Canada. I was reading about that last month. This isn't the first time, right?
No, I should say not. It's almost impossible to stop them, unless we want to station somebody at every tiny little airport in Michigan, every single night.
They fly in, drop it off, fly right back.
They're on the ground for 5 minutes, she said. 10 minutes tops. It's kind of ingenious.
Wait, didn't they actually handcuff some people to the fence last time?
They did, yes. We found them a few hours later. Good thing it was summertime or they would have frozen to death. Not that things ended up any better for them.
What? Are you saying...
I didn't just tell you that, she said. But yeah, we ended up letting them go. They weren't in possession of anything, after all. The drugs and the money were long gone by the time we got there, as well as the airplane and the hijackers. All we had were two men handcuffed to a fence. We figured they'd be good leads to follow anyway. So that's what we'd been doing, up until this week.
They didn't get the message, you're saying. So this time around, they ended up in a shootout.
Just like the good old days, she said. Only replace the booze with marijuana.
So, who are the other guys? You must have them ID'd by now. She didn't say anything. There was nothing but a distant hum on the line.
You know I can't go there, she said. But I can tell you this. The pilot was Canadian. The receivers were just your average local dealers. Maybe a little bit above average, because it was a pretty big quantity we're talking about, and maybe a little bit crazy. Because after what happened last time...
Local as in where? I said. Were they from up here?
No, from downstate. That's one of the mysteries. Why they'd go so far north to do this. It's the first time they've connected in the Upper Peninsula as far as we know.
Okay, so what about the hijackers?
That's where I have to stop you, she said. I can't talk about them at all.
You're saying what? It's... not just some other group of pot dealers who found out about the party and decided to crash it?
No, this isn't just another bunch of pot dealers. Look, Alex, you know how bad it's been getting down on the Mexican border. This is a long way from there, but the idea is still the same, right? Even if those cartels are not directly involved in this, you have to know that they're setting a standard for how you run a drug trade. Other groups see how well it works and then use the same approach. One warning, then absolutely no mercy after that. Just flat-out appalling violence. That's how you move in and take over.
So, these new people, they're from where again?
I didn't say, and I'm not going to. I'm dead serious.
Okay, I understand you can't talk about it. I heard her let out a long breath.
Just be careful. That's the one thing I can say. If your friends really are mixed up in this...
Is it that bad?
Yes,
she said.
As bad as it gets.
We both let that thought hang in the silence for a while. It's good talking to you, I said. I'm sorry I called so late.
It's okay, Alex. It's good talking to you, too, no matter what time it is.
I wished her a good night. She wished me one right back, but I think we both knew that was impossible at this point. I certainly wasn't going to sleep through any of it. I may have dozed off for an hour, maybe two, but I snapped awake around 8 in the morning with a sudden thought. I took a shower and got into the truck. As I drove by Vinny's, I took a quick look, knowing exactly what I'd see, but hoping against hope anyway. I shouldn't have bothered. When I got to the reservation, I drove right to the Weishki building. I had been running through my conversation with the chief over and over again. I kept feeling like I had missed something important, maybe something we had both missed, but I couldn't put my finger on it. I figured if I talked to him again, it would come to me. I parked by the police department entrance and went inside. The officer on duty told me Chief Benali was unavailable. That got my mind racing again. He's with Vinny right now, I thought. Vinny contacted him again, and the chief has raced off to go help him. Just tell him to call me, I said to the officer, as soon as he gets back. I left my cell phone number. I thanked the man. The whole transaction was perfectly polite and reasonable, but as I walked out, there were two other officers coming in. They held the door open for me. I know I was just imagining it, but it felt like they were giving me a little extra space, like, right this way, sir. Have a good day, and don't hurry back. I am my own worst enemy. I realize that. I get something in my head, and I can't let go of it, and I drive myself and everyone else around me absolutely crazy. Even when I know I'm doing it, I just can't stop. That's what led me to drive into the Sioux and to stop in at the multiplex. I wasn't there to see a movie, God knows. I was there to see Leon Prudell. When I did my little ill-fated stint as a private investigator, working for a local lawyer, Leon was the man whose job I took. He paid me a visit at the Glasgow one night and tried to take me apart in the parking lot. From that auspicious beginning, a strange sort of friendship grew. I hated being a private eye, even before the whole thing blew up in my face. On the other hand, being a private eye was the only thing Leon ever wanted, ever since he was a kid. He even tried to set up his own practice in a rented office on Ashmont Street. There just isn't enough business around here, even if you double as a bail bondsman. He had been working a string of odd jobs ever since. His latest was right here at the multiplex, serving popcorn with yellow sludge on top to teenagers. You look at him, and you see an overweight local guy in a flannel shirt with that wild orange hair on his head, and you might think that this kind of job is the only thing he's qualified to do. But he has a nose for investigation. He still knows how to break down a situation and look at it from every angle. That's why I still go to him whenever I need help. The lobby was pretty much empty, with another sunny July day going on outside. I asked the kid at the ticket booth if Leon was going to be around today, but he seemed not to know who I was talking about. We circled around that point for a while, because how many orange-haired adult men could actually work there? Eventually, I got passed off to a manager, who told me that Leon had quit about a week ago. Good for him, I thought as I walked out. I got back into the truck and drove out of town, just south to Rosedale. I pulled up in front of the Prudell house, with that tire swing in the front yard, hanging from the lowest branch. The car was gone, but I knocked on the door anyway. Nobody answered. As I stood on the front porch, I looked around. Something seemed out of place. That's when I remembered the camper that was usually parked next to the driveway. One of those fold-up things you tow behind your car. It was gone now, which could only mean one thing. Leon and his entire family were on vacation. After I got back into the truck, I just sat there for a while, staring out the windshield at nothing. If Leon was really your friend, you'd already know he was on vacation. You would have talked about it. He would have told you where he was going and how excited his kids were. You would have wished him a great trip. Maybe you'd even be stopping by his house just to make sure the mail was stopped and the newspapers weren't piling up at the front door. But no, you go see him only when you want something from him. When you need his help, you know he'll be only too willing to oblige. Then you forget about him until the next time. Hell, You did the same thing to Janet last night. You called her up in the middle of the night because you wanted information. Did you spend more than 2 seconds asking her how she was doing? That leaves 2 other people in your life, Jackie and Vinny. Are those your only true friends? The only 2 people you can really talk to? If so, then it's no wonder you go so crazy when one of them is missing. One friend means half your goddamned world right there. I started to think about other people who had meant the world to me once upon a time. The father who raised me on his own. My ex-wife. My dead partner. A certain Ontario provincial policewoman. All of them gone now. Is that why I didn't want anyone else to get too close to me? Okay, I thought. Enough with the psychoanalysis. Just find Vinny. Or hell, maybe Chief Benally is right. Maybe you just have to wait for him to show up on his own. That's when you can tell him you don't have enough friends left to be losing one. I put the truck in gear and took off. I was sitting at the bar. Jackie put a cold Canadian in front of me. Thank you, I said. He hesitated for a moment, looked at me before walking away. How are you doing? I said.
Excuse me?
I asked you how you're doing.
Why?
Because I want to know. He came back to my end of the bar.
What's going on? Since when do you need to know how I'm doing?
I didn't say I need to know. I'm just... Look, forget it. He walked away, shaking his head. I sat there and slowly emptied the bottle while the sun went down. There was a Tigers game on above the bar. I watched it for a while without paying attention to it at all. When Jackie came back to take my empty bottle away, I asked him if he had a map of Michigan. He went to the kitchen and came back with the standard road map, with the blow-up of Metropolitan Detroit on the back. I spread it out on the bar, squinting in the fading light. I'm wondering where the rest of the reservations are, I said. Can you make them out? He came around and squinted next to me.
You think Vinny's there?
He said, a statement, not a question.
Vinny and his cousin, one of the other reservations.
It would make sense. That's the best place to go if you're in trouble. He stood there and looked at the map with me for another few moments.
You can't find him, he said. Not in a million years.
I kept looking. Then I folded up the map. Ah, you're right. I gave him back his map and left. Outside, the air had cooled, but the sky was clear. An amazing night in the Upper Peninsula. But I couldn't let myself enjoy it. I got into the truck and drove up the road. Took my left and knew I'd see Vinny's dark cabin again. Came around that bend and stopped dead. There was a car parked outside his cabin. There was a light on inside. I slowly backed up the truck until it was out of sight. Then I swung it crosswise so it was blocking the road. I grabbed a flashlight and made my way back toward Vinny's cabin, moving as quietly as I could. The car parked in front of the cabin was a white Camry with a Michigan plate. I snapped on the flashlight and took a quick look inside. There was 1 suitcase in the back seat, a rental agreement on the front seat, next to a road map just like the one I'd been looking over at the Glasgow. I saw the Thrifty sticker in the corner of the windshield and started putting some things together. Thrifty and Avis were the only 2 rental companies at the airport in Sault Ste. Marie. Somebody flew in, rented this car, and drove here. He came up this road and found Vinny's cabin, and from here, he might not even have suspected that there were more cabins beyond it. He wouldn't know that I'd be heading up this road, and that I'd see his rental car parked out front. Don't let me stop you, I thought. Just keep doing whatever it is you're doing. I crept up to the door and listened. Then I moved to the nearest window and stood with my back against the rough wood of the cabin. Then I turned and moved slowly until I could finally see through the edge of the glass. A figure, 1 male, standing at Vinny's counter, holding Vinny's phone. His back was to me, which gave me the chance to give him a good look from top to bottom. He had black hair streaked with gray, just long enough to tie into a tight ponytail. He was wearing a beat-up old leather jacket. jeans and black cowboy boots with metal tips. He turned around just then, quickly, as if startled by something. Even though I had not made the slightest sound, I held my breath and kept my back to the wall. I heard him moving inside. A gun would be nice right about now, I thought. Or at least something big to hit this guy with. The door opened, and a wedge of light hit the ground inches from my feet. I saw his face, his eyes widening as he recognized what was about to happen. I had to act fast to keep any advantage, so I went right at him. I put the heel of my hand to his chin and drove him backward. He stumbled back into the cabin, but did not fall. I grabbed his right wrist and spun him around, twisting the arm behind him. He bent over, and I thought I had him dead, until he tripped me and turned himself free, perfectly using my own momentum against me. Clearly, this wasn't his first tango. He tried to kick me in the ribs and just grazed me. I rolled over and grabbed something to throw at him, anything, a book from the coffee table, flying open like a great wounded bird as it hit him in the face. I drove my shoulder into his chest, taking him all the way into the kitchen until his back hit the edge of the counter. I could tell that hurt him bad. He sagged like he was about to go down, but I was ready for the bluff this time. He came right back with a big swing. I ducked it and put one right in his gut. He reached back to the counter, grabbing for a knife or anything else he could use to defend himself. I slid open one of Vinny's kitchen drawers and grabbed the heaviest thing I could find. A good old-fashioned rolling pin, something right out of the movies, but what the hell. It was as good as a bat, and I knew I could knock his teeth out if I had to. "Who are you?" I said. "What the hell are you doing here?"
"Peace," he said, putting his hands up. "Please, friend, peace."
I was breathing hard. So was he. Now that we had stopped moving, I got a better look at him from the front. To say that he was tanned would be an understatement. He was more like a walking public service announcement for sunscreen, so absolutely ruined by the sun that it was hard to tell how old he was. I was betting a little older than me, anyway. He was breathing just as hard as I was, so that was another clue that his best fighting years were behind him.
"I asked you a question," I said, still ready with the rolling pin. "Now start talking."
He looked me straight in the eye for the first time. That's when I saw the resemblance. The years had not been kind to him. All those hard years in prison, much of it obviously spent outside in the sun, maybe on a road crew, or God knows what. But I could see the answer to my question, even as he answered it.
"My name is Lou LeBlanc," he said. "I'm Vinny's father."